And welcome everybody to the Between Two Wheels podcast, the best cycling show on right now. Today's show, Sepp Kuss falters as GC leader. Should we be worried? Tadej Pogačar scores four victories in preparation for the Giro, but as he peaked too soon, Landa looks strong and Bernal resurges into the GC Tour picture. Matthew Vanderpoel is brilliant at A3 and Mads Pedersen gets the best of the rest at Gent Wevelgem. It's Sunday, March 23, 2024, and this is the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 322. Let's begin. Hello, everybody. I hope you. I hope people will join us. It's Sunday night. This is what we're doing. Remember, Sunday night, we're doing a show about cycling, recapping the World Tour. If there's other stuff to recap and talk about, maybe to rant about, we will do that as well. I am Tyler Yonke, your host of the Between Two Wheels podcast. We're going to do. Here's what's on the agenda today. Okay, E3. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Volta a Catalunya. We're going to talk about Gent Wevelgem, and we're going to talk some specifics about each one of those. We're going to do a little bit of mailbag. We're going to talk about that, and then building towards grand tours about some of the people that are having some trouble, or they have in trouble. And so that's for us to figure out. So I did a rant last week about Lance Armstrong, and I got some positive comments about it. It was interesting. Some people reached out. I saw another friend on a ride the other day, and the comment is like, "Oh, I got a little problem with Lance." And everyone, I think people understand Lance's thing about having problems with high fives. My point was just that that's what he took away. He's a little bit fragile. One person really took pot shots at me, and I will read that particular portion or that particular. Victor says, pro cycling on YouTube with Tyler. Yeah, good job, Victor. So anyway, I hope everyone's joining us. Remember, put your notifications on. We're going to do these live on Sunday nights for the most part. Hang on a second. Let me fix this camera. For the most part, that's what I try to do. And if I can at least remember to do so, that's what we're going to do. So we'll keep pounding these out. These being the shows. So let's start in. So you had Volta a Catalunya. It's a race there in the Catalunya portion of Spain. Looked ridiculous. It was hard. And the real competition we had going in there was Tadej Pogačar. You had Sepp Kuss for Visma Lisebaik. Kian Uttebrechts was also there for Visma Lisebaik. That's how Wout says it when he's doing his commercial. Adam Yates, but you weren't too sure about how he was coming in there. Mikel Landa of Sudal Quickstep, for the most part, he's going to be support for Remco, but he's damn good himself. Egan Bernal's there. Geraint Thomas is there. You had Steve Williams. There's a bunch of João Almeida. So it was going to be interesting to see how this was going to play out. Then we had E3 during the week, and then we had Gent Wevelgem. So what I thought we would do, we'll start with the two kind of classic type of races. We'll start with E3. We'll go to Gent Wevelgem, and then we'll finish it off with Volta a Catalunya, because there were seven stages there. So I do want to go through at least four of those stages that Tadej won, spoiler, and kind of give you a little understanding of what took place there. So E3 Helvetica, which used to be called, now it's E3 Saxo Classic, 207.6 kilometers, a 1-point World Tour race. Maybe we should just start sharing the screen, and we can, for those watching it, we can take a look here. There's the profile. It's got all these quick, tough little bergs that they have to climb up and over, which makes it difficult. It was a little wet. And it was pretty exciting. So let me get to that. That's the profile you have there. Now, coming into the race, the people, let me see here. Sorry. I'm going to get to the start list. And then we'll talk about, we'll walk through the, and I'm going to pull it right up on the screen. As we've done before, we'll just click through. Not going to play the screen here, but for the other. But let me go through the start list first. We had Wout, Mateo Jorgensen for Visma Lisebike, Thijs Benoot. That's your main ones here. Matthew van der Poel for Alpecin De Koninck. Who did he have really? He just had a bunch of support riders. Alaphilippe Asgreen for Soudal. Intermarché is Guillaume Bignam. I think he won this race a few years ago. Arkea, we're not going to care. Astana, they weren't really in the mix. Danny van Poppel for Bora. Bahrain had Mate Mohoric. These are your highlight guys. Kofidis, Ami Degant, maybe, but really no one there. Decathlon, Oliver Nason, Ivan Bolsenhagen, those are your you'd think of. Stefan Kung for Groupama. Bedial for EF. Ineos, Ben Turner. Magnus Sheffield, Jonathan Narvaez. So you've got some decent ones there. Mads Pedersen for Trek. That's the one you're going to look for. Or Jasper Stuyven. Those are your two main guys there. Team DSM. I mean, Patrick Eddy, I guess, there. But not really looking for anybody. Luke Lascano for Movistar. That we've already seen him do well. He's the Spanish national champion. He did well in that that dirt race. Michael Matthews, who did well, obviously, at Milano San Remo. So we're looking for him to come in. Tim Wellens for UAE. Lotto Destiny with Arnaud Delis. Israel with Fullsong. They have Riley Sheehan there. The American Tudor has Matteo Trentin. Anyway, we could keep going on down. Uno X, Rasmus Tillier, maybe. So you got a smattering of guys coming through there. You know, there's possibilities. But what we're really looking for here, especially after Wout's been, now Wout's big big plan is to go big for coming up at Flanders, which is next weekend. And he didn't do Gent Wevelgem today, but he did do, E3, obviously, because we're talking about it here. He just came back from an altitude camp. Matthew van der Poel just comes out from a bike, leading his teammate out, Jesper Philipsen, at Milan Sanremo. The only one that's able to go with Tadej over the climb. You know he's riding well. You got Mads Pedersen, who did fairly well at Milano Sanremo, what, fourth there. He's won races early on the season. So everyone's primed and looking good and ready to go. Decent, like I said, it was kind of rainy, a little cold. There's the riders going up there. And also, I would say Mateo Jorgensen is also a rider that we've seen early on. What did he do? What was the other? Het Volk. It used to be called Het Volk, and it's Het something else. So anyway, there's the kind of the loop we got going on.
At Sutter.
I'm sorry. Let me pause this here, and they're going to play a commercial because that's what we have. We've got to do someone needs to start posting these out on Rumble, maybe, or Odyssey, where I can just play the whole damn thing and no one would actually give you a strike because that's just the way it is there. Okay, so there's a grip that goes up the road early, 100 plus kilometers. As you can see, it's pretty bad weather. They come in, you know, 70, 80 kilometers to go. Little trek starts hitting it, but you now you have a series of attacks coming in by Matthew van der Poel. And these are basically just start weakening the field up here. Stuyven and Mads Pedersen, they have a little trouble. And what you see on multiple attacks that are going on here, and he being Matthew van der Poel, keeps trying to go up the road. People do pull him back, which is Mateo Jorgensen pulls him back. Wout van Aert pulls him back. But each time you can just see Wout doesn't have snap. He doesn't have the ability to jump on the pedals. If, like, as an example, if you're coming down to a sprint, he just doesn't really quite have that. And it's a little bit of trouble. Alaphilippe's up there. But who does look really good this whole time is Mateo Jorgensen. The group kind of gets split. You still look, once again, there's multiple attacks. It's still 70 kilometers to go. Mads takes an attack. Wout pulls him back. Matthew van der Poel pulls him back. Luscano takes an attack at 58 kilometers to go. Wout and Matthew van der Poel are both able to go on his wheel. And it kind of just, once again, it's splitting things up, but then it comes back together. And it's looking like, look, these are going to be the eventual guys that get the break going up the road. Luscano goes up the road. Mateo goes with him. Then Mateo has trouble staying with him. But then the group, once again, comes all back together. And so it's just, it's kind of a weird little situation. Now, 43.8 kilometers to go. And I do have a video that's a little bit more. And this is Jonathan Narvez in there. I'm not sure if that's pithy there for Groupama. But you have Luscano off the front, just with a little gap. Right behind him is Narvez of Ineos. Behind him, you have Matthew Vanderpoel, and they're coming around a slight corner. It's cobbled. It's on a climb, and Vanderpoel goes in the weeds, and Pithy's over here on the side, and Vanderpoel's already starting to do just a little bit of an attack come out of this, but as you can say, he just barely went into the gutter, in a sense, which was into some weeds, and Wout follows him in there. You can see in this picture right here, if you're watching it, Wout is a little bit sideways. He starts to cross his front wheel up and he goes down. Now, as this is happening, Vanderpoel is already in full. I mean, he's out of the saddle. He's sprinting up this climb. He's not going to stop. Wout goes down. Everyone avoids him, but Vanderpoel is kicking onward. And some people made some comments like, oh, how can you attack? I'm sorry, he's in full attack mode. I never heard Wout say one thing that there was any kind of problems with this. And to say so, you either just don't know cycling or you're some major kind of, dare I say, pussy. However, Vanderpoel just kicks it at this point and he's gone. And they're having trouble. You know, Wout gets on his bike. He was on his climb. It was tough. He gets back up to the group. He's got Mateo Jorgensen up there. Luscano is up there. The whole group is up there. And they're setting out, but they're going over some of these additional bergs. 39 kilometers to go. Here is where I think Wout makes his mistake. He has Mateo Jorgensen. They go up this little climb, and Wout decides to go clear and free and solo. He's got 30 seconds on Matthew Vanderpoel. And he decides, but he's got 40 kilometers out. He just did a chase to catch on from getting dropped, you know, from his crash. But he decides to go solo. And I think this is the mistake, because what you would have had is him maybe waiting on a little bit longer. You had Mateo Jorgensen and Wout. They could have worked. And then Wout could have made a bridge move. But in the end, what it ends up being is Wout gets very close. At some point, I think he's about 12, 13 seconds up one of these climbs to Vanderpoel, who's just screaming along here and is looking very good. Look at it, 30 seconds, 28 seconds, but it did get to, and I skip forward here, but at one point it was around 13, 14 seconds going up one of these bergs, and Vanderpoel just hit it hard and over the top. That gap was near now about 22 seconds, and it just grows. And then the group behind is starting to get closer. And this is what I mean, which is at some point Wout either needed to just sit up and go back and wait for the group and then have them help get him back up to the front with Mateo. Or he needed to, because Mateo ended up being strong still today. Or and really that's what he did, because he's not going to close it. But instead he kept going. And at some point that group's going to come up to you, and then you're going to be shit because you've been out there in the wind this whole time. Which is exactly what happened. Stuyven ends up taking a break from the group behind, bridges up to Wout. Matthew Vanderpoel ends up soloing into the finish. He does a spectacular, let's just see this here, spectacular salute. Standing up off of his bike in the wet, does a salute on his bike. It's one of the more phenomenal post-ups that I've seen, simply because of the weather. And Stuyven had no trouble coming him around Wout. And behind him, Mateo Jorgensen tried to sprint out. Well, he took a break trying to get past all these guys. And then in the end, only one caught him. And we'll see who that exactly was. So he ends up, fifth place. Wout is third. And Matthew Vanderpoel, an exceptional first place. There we go. Matthew Vanderpoel, first place, a minute 31 behind Jesper Stuyven, then Wout. 134, Tim Wellens, that's who it was for UAE, at 148, and Mateo Jorgensen at 150, Jonathan Narvez at 152, Niels Pollitt at 248, Squeens at 248, Albanese 248, and Alex Kirsch at 248. So you had one, let's see, Little Trek, we got one, who else is in here? Two. They had three in the top 10. That's not too bad. Two for you, for Visma Liesebaik, and obviously Matt Vanderpoel bringing up there in the win. So solid move for him. But like I said, at some point when there was, and let's play this here. I'm going to go to I got a little bit of a video here. This is a little bit more in context. Let's watch Luscano, and behind him you have Vanderpool going, and then there you go. Wout goes down. I'm gonna mute it here so I don't get a copyright strike. Vanderpool goes down. Everyone tries to go around him, but you can see here, Matthew Vanderpool is in full sprint. There's no controversy that he should have at all. And Wout just hit the deck. I'm surprised no one else went down with him. Pretty astounding, actually. But yeah, there's no chance in the world that that's any kind of not fair play. So there you go. That was a decent race that they had. Then you had Gent Wevelgem today, 253 kilometers. Some stuff going up in the middle there. Some climbs. Let's take a look at the profile real quick. There we go. And everything coming in near the two thirds of the way. Just spilled this here into the end with some, you know, pretty good thing, but there's the loop. You got it in there, a little bit of back and forth. It's a little confusing if you're just trying to make this, but for the most part, you know, some of these climbs here, the Mottenberg, they go over a few times, the Scharpenberg, the Kemmelberg, and the Kemmelberg at least twice. Okay, so once again, let's go to the, I'm going to have to mute this thing here. Let's go to the highlights. And this one was, I thought, not as exciting in the middle, but it was super exciting at the end. Okay, there's the loop. There you go. There's some of the climbs, the Scharpenberg, the Bainberg, the Kemmelberg, the Montberg, the Catacombs. And once again, you get a group whittled down at the end, and with 85 kilometers to go, Matthew Vanderpool gets on the front. Wout's not in this race. Mads Pedersen goes with him, and Little Trek, I don't know if Stuyven or whoever was in there, but Mads Pedersen Jonathan Milan was up there as well, looking strong. And it was really just a Mads and Wout day. In the end, Matthew Vanderpool and Prithy was up there as well. At some point, it becomes just the three of them, Mads, Prithy, Vanderpool. And then it was just these two, Mads and Vanderpool, just rode Prithy off their wheel. He ends up coming behind. There you go. You got to kind of sit up and see if there's a group behind you that you're going to end up joining up. And then it was just these two drilling it. And there was coming back. They had a minute 15 at some point. And coming into the last kilometer, it really had, it was down to like 20 some seconds. They played a little bit of a game. But here's what you really had, which is you have two different types of sprinters. Mads Pedersen is much better at high-end speed and trying to kick it from a faster speed, like with a lead out. What we've seen with Matthew Vanderpool is he's good at the jump. He gets a quick jump, and then he's got a gap on you, and he'll just hold that out. So with that in mind, I think Mads Pedersen knew what his strength was, and he didn't want to get jumped, and he led into this finish pretty good speed, kicked hard, and it looked like it was going to be close. But you can see here, right about 25 meters to go, Matthew Vanderpool just put his head down and said, maybe it's for another day. So Mads Pedersen gets the win. The field sprint comes in behind, and it looked like it was going to be Jonathan Milan, his teammate, but it was not. And so there you go. And I'll show you here the lead. It was Mads Pedersen, Matthew Vanderpool in second, first at E3, second here at Ghent. Then Jordi Mies for Bora. I think didn't he win a stage at one of the Grand Tours last year? I want to say in the Tour de France. Jasper Philipsen in fourth, Jonathan Milan in fifth, Olav Koy for Visma Liesebike in sixth, Biniam Girmay, Tim Miller, Dylan Groenewegen, Matteo Trentin. I mean, look at that. That's a solid, solid top 10 for sure. So there you go. I was pretty, it was fun to watch coming out to the finish. And looked like a good sprint that we had there. Okay, what do we have now? Well, what do we have going on is we're going to talk about the Volta a Catalunya. And with that, I'll try to skip through a little bit here, see if I remember all the stages as they came about. Stage one, it had a bit of a kick at the end, so it was an interesting race coming down into it. And here, let's see if we can try to get back to, there we go. With that kick, you had a Israel Primertek writer, trying to remember which one it was, coming into the finish. Well, we'll show exactly who it was here because he ends up winning. Into the bottom of the climb, UAE had already depleted themselves, but it was enough with the climbers, the sprinters, it's kind of a mix. And Israel was kind of leading out for Stevie Williams, but their teammate here, once again, his name, I lose his name for some reason, but he was barely able to hold on. As it came out, 400 meters or so from the line, when this thing really kicks up, you can see here 300 meters to go. Tadej Pogacar jumps on the front, is a lightning bolt streaking out there, and he comes flying past the rider at the finish, but he had held up, and then Steve Williams ends up being able to get the race for first. Bernal was up there. Actually, he had crashed coming into the finish, but he gets same time, which is important for the overall when you come into. So Tadej Pogacar ends up with a second place. Very close. I mean, when he comes out of it, he could have had, five wins or so? Let's see. Do they show the GC for what we had here? There we go. Nick Schultz. That's who it was. Nick Schultz ends up winning over Pogacar, Steve Williams, Seth Kuss down there in ninth place. Looked okay. He doesn't have a big kick on him. So, it's perfectly fine for what it was. And that was stage one. Now, stage two was up to this Valter 2000. It was brutal. The weather was horrible. It was big time rain. They come into the last climb. There was, who cares about what the brakes were up the road, because it really is. I mean, look at this. This is just nasty, nasty coming into the last climb here. And Tadej Pogacar just lights everyone up and takes off. And it was so bad that the cameras really couldn't even show us what was going on. And so it was tough to really see, but Mikhail Landa was doing fine. João Almeida was doing fine. Vlasov was doing good. Tadej Pogacar was killing it. And who wasn't? Couldn't see in the picture? Seb Kuss. So you're like, oh boy, Seb Kuss isn't there. Kian Uttebrooks isn't there. There you go. Tadej ends up getting a first win. He almost got a win the day before. He gets a win on stage two. Mikhail Landa comes across the line looking very solid for Sudal Quickstep. So for him, I think, it was a good move coming over to them from, Movie Star last year. Is that who he was with? I don't know. We'll have to take a look at that. But Seb Kuss comes down 2+ minutes back. And so immediately, being in ninth place, Bernal was up there, Almeida, Martinez, Harper had a good ride, Wout Poels had a good ride. And so once again, you're looking at stage two and you're just kind of like, okay, what about stage three? Well, do I have these ones here? What happened? I thought I had all these all arranged out here. You know what? We're going to skip forward and I'm just actually going to go to the results for these stage three. Stage three had a good kick up to the line as well. This one was a little bit more interesting because Pogacar, and just like always, takes off. And this one, I noticed this of Seb Kuss this week, and especially on stage three, which is his positioning. Typically, he's always at the front. If you look when he's working for Vingego or Pogacar, he's always up at the front. He's looking good. And his fitness is just a little bit different. We will talk about a little bit about that. So he's a little bit more fit, but he comes into this climb, this last pitch, 9 kilometer climb here. And he's sitting like 20 some people back. And I'm immediately going, you never know when Tadej is going to take off. Tadej does take off. Okay. And when he took off, Sepp was like 20 people back. Now he's got to like move up to get to even to the front of this group as it's fracturing. You got Mikhail Landa starts to try to go with Pogacar to begin with. He's holding him and then he comes off. Soon, Seb Kuss, and you're like, oh, here we go. He bridges all the way up to Landa. It was an amazing bridge. Boom, he's up there. But then he sits on, they both work. 2 kilometers to go. I want to say, who else came up there? Vlasov came up, I think, to him. And then Vlasov had trouble. Or was it Harper? I think it was Chris Harper. Chris Harper comes up to them as well. But then Chris Harper's coming off. Then Seb Kuss comes off. Harper comes off. Land is able to stay up there. He ends up coming in for second. Tadej Pogacar wins. 48 seconds back is Landa. And then Wout Poels ends up sweeping up with Vlasov and Tabari. They sweep up Seb Kuss and Chris Harper. Christian Rodriguez comes up there. Lenny Martinez, Enric Mas, and the rest. Matthew Riccatello had trouble on day one. He does good on day three, but he ends up quitting out there. So Seb Kuss is kind of like, he's looking better. But not to where we want him. Stage four, another, this one didn't have a big climb in it. Well, it had one in the middle, but it came down to a sprint, and EF Education's Mern Vandenberg gets the win over Merritt, and Brian Cocard was in there. So no real change on GC. Stage five, once again, kind of another sprinter type day, and you get Axel Lorenz for Alpecin De Quinnick getting in there over Vandenberg, who got second, and Cocard up there in third. No change in GC for the main guys. Then you have stage six, and stage six, we will, let's bring this one up here. We do have the video. We'll just click through for that one. That's stage three, stage six. And this one is a brutal climb. Berga to Berga, basically, or Berga to Kuralt. Kuralt is a climb right outside of Berga. It has been known to me now that evidently Sepp Kuss did this route because he lives nearby here. And he did tweeted out about this would be amazing stage for Catalunya. And then they did it. And everyone's talking about how it's one of the most brutal routes that they've ever done. Like, this is, you know, Tour de France style. I mean, here's the climbing we had. It starts up with a Cat 3 and then a Cat 2, and then this Col de Pradelle, which is almost, I mean, it was way up there, and it's a special category climb. They drop down, they hit another Cat 1, have some bumps in there that are no small feats, and then they end up on a Cat 1 climb up to Kuralt. But this E3, this special, was just a brutal, brutal thing. So you're looking at, you know, last 80, 75 or so kilometers to go. And luckily the TV came on. Oh, hang on. Once again, we got these stupid commercials you got going here. Once again, the TV came on and we were actually able to check out this entire climb. And it was fantastic. Now, they come into the bottom of the climb as soon as this commercial gets done playing here. They come into the bottom of the climb and I'm thinking, oh, it's a world of a different everything, because Sepp Kuss has his team already at the bottom, killing it here, up for that decline. Now there's a group up the climb, but we don't really care about this because this is exactly, you know, the kind of stuff that it's not really. So Steven Kruiswijk, you can see here, he's on the front a little, then you've got Valters up there with him, then some UAE riders, and then you have Sepp Kuss, Otterbrooks, and probably Hessink, and then some others, but there's still, I mean, they're too far behind. I don't really understand why. And, you know, Chris Horner's talked about this over and over about your team getting on the front when you don't need to. This is exactly a situation that I have no idea why Visma Lisa Bike was on the front here. So they set up this climb and it's immediately a brutal one. They bring back the break and Hessing's on the front. Then it gets even steeper. Next thing you know, Kruiswijk's on the front. Remember, he's got third in the Tour de France. Ineos gets up there to bang bars as well. It's fine to do this for positioning into the climb, but it's one thing to do it on the climb. And then this climb just starts as the steep and steeper it gets here, 4 kilometers to the top. It starts getting really steep. And you can see 1.9 here. There's the helicopter. Let's see if we can get it right back here. Kruiswijk's on the front. Otterbrooks is at least up front, but Sepp Kuss, about 2K to the top, starts to just lose it. And he comes off the back of this thing and I'm just like, what is going on? You've got 60 kilometers to go and Sepp is off the thing with 2K to go to the top. Kruiswijk has to, actually it's 1.8. You can start to see Sepp just at the back here. I don't know if he got in the blower to tell him, hey, I've got problems. George Bennett had issues going over the top of this climb. But as it turned out, they come over the top. There's a long descent. The whole thing regroups. Okay. So Sepp Kuss comes back to the front. He's got teammates with him. Sweet. Maybe your legs are feeling better. But then he just continues to have trouble. He has trouble over this Cat 1 climb, comes off. They all come back together. They come back into the bottom of the last stage, or this last climb up to Kuralt. Now, between there, the groups kind of splinter a bit. You have Landa and Bernal. They decide to chase. And in the middle, you have one other rider, which is Henrik Mas. And then, but I forgot to mention, about 60K to go or so. I think that's around there where it was. Tadej Pogacar just says, fuck you all, I'm out of here. And he just takes off. And, you know, you can see it here with 11K to go before they hit the last climb. He's got 53 seconds, 109 at 7.7. And he's just solo. And, you know, I think he just felt too good. So up the last climb, he has really no trouble. The climb's pretty big and crowded with people. He comes across the line, holds up three fingers, I think, for the win. Then you have Bernal and Landa coming in just under They held the gap basically, but they hold it just under a minute to the finish. And then it's a smattering of people: Vlasov, Harper, Tabari, Almeida, Martinez, Fernando. Sepp Kuss comes in well behind that, and just kind of let's see if we can see it here. Where's that one at? Where'd it go? Come on, there we go. Vlasov on 10th. That's the classification. Okay, I guess they're not going to really show us that. So anyway, you're a little bit disappointed, and then coming into the last stage today, Volta al Catalunya, they come into Barcelona, and there's a bunch of pitchy stuff up there. Tadej Pogačar ends up winning that one as well, really with no trouble, and coming kind of in a sprint. There's a gap there once again. Sepp Kuss gets pushed out of the back, not so great. And where does he end up on GC? Let me just pull this up. So we'll talk about why are these, or should we be worried about some of these risks? So here's let's look at the GCs. Tadej wins. So Mikel Landa, 341 back. That's not great, but I mean, he was definitely the best of the rest. Egan Bernal really made a resurgence. Vlasov is looking decent. Henrik Mas looked good yesterday for the most part. He really suffered, though, on the last climb. Chris Harper looks good. Lenny Martinez, all these guys. Sepp Kuss down here in 13th place, 820 out. And do you worry about that? Perhaps. But do you also worry about Tadej Pogačar, who's going to the Vuelta? Do you worry about him being too far out in front? Sepp Kuss calls for patience on his form as he declares, "I still have room to grow." So there's a little article here about what he's, and that I remember reading stuff, interviews with him last year, talking about these early season grand tours, and basically saying, "Look, it's going to be impossible for me to really compete in these early season 7-week stage races. Maybe the Dauphiné coming up right before the tour, but he's just like, it just doesn't happen." So he's not that, his tune hasn't changed from last year to this year, because this is what he said: "I'd love to win or do better here, but I know the level in these 1-week races, especially in the spring, it's always so high that I can't achieve things that aren't possible. You've always got to go into it hoping for the best and not giving up beforehand. But I know for myself, physically and mentally, that the best races for me are the Grand Tours, and those are still pretty far away. So it's hard to take too much stock in what's happening now." His coach said he has previously said that making Kuss a leader at 1-week races is not the approach and would elicit the best, elicit the best form for the Colorado. And although there is clearly some hope for the team that he can be consistent at all races, as evidenced by him wearing number 11, Tour Spain denoting. Yeah, so I just don't think, okay, there's more here. There's always expectations from everybody, but for me, it's only on myself. I have to concentrate on feeling good and doing my best. I've not done the training I would do before big races yet, but already I'm in good shape, so that's really nice for me. I feel really good without going doing the real hard training, and it shows, and still have room to grow. So the question would be, does the team care about these little, I didn't say little, but Volta al Catalunya and having Sepp there, or do they need him to be in shape and ready for either the Giro or mostly the Tour as prime support? And obviously the answer is the Tour as prime support. Maybe he's not that guy that can rip it like Pogacar, like Vingego all season long, Remco. So, it sounds like to me, he's just saying, look, this is just not my method. However, look, you can't give up too much. I mean, he did the Giro, the Tour, and the Vuelta, and he was exceptional on almost all of those, especially the Vuelta, because no one was actually better than him. One more thing here, because it reminds me, here's another article with kind of the same thing. Garrett Thomas, the art of peaking with Garrett Thomas. It's easy to take for granted that 9 times out of 10, I hit my goals. Okay. It's easy to take, and he says, "I hit my goals and that I am shape I want to be when I get there," he said. Okay, other things that might come into play once you're there, but it's still hard to do, especially these days, because every race is so hard. I'm not going to get too complacent. I need to keep pushing and try to get to the Giro in top shape. Everyone is different, but now everyone is within 90% of their best shape, and they stay within that. I find that to be 100%, I need to be down around 60%. That way of working is something I've always had since my track days, since I was a junior. It's just so normal for me. What does that mean? Everyone is different. To be I find that to be 100%, I need to be down around 60. So you mean the process of moving up there is what takes it? Everyone is going well from the start of the year, he continued. So mentally, you need to stay strong because it would be easy to crack a bit and say, whoa, I can't do this anymore, because you want to be in the thick of the race and you don't want to be suffering all the time. He described his current form as better than where I was this time last year and admitted that he is spending more time at the moment thinking about the Giro and the Tour because it's the first one and the one I am building up now. Jonas and Pog are the two standout riders when it comes to the Grand Tour stage racing at the minute. And the rest of us, I'd say, are in the same ballpark and anyone can get a result, he said. The good thing about Grand Tours is that a lot can happen. Pog and Jonas are strong physically. They have great teams around them, but still anything can happen. It's just about staying on it and getting yourself in the right place. Let's see what else he says here. I think more than anything about governing point of view, he opined, more sustainable, more profitable for teams. We have seen so many teams come and go, and it's a bit of an old school way. Everyone has their own interests, the teams, the riders, the race organizers, the sponsors. The UCI, it's lining up to be a bit more and making it more appealing to teams, making it more profitable. That would grow the sport. Okay, last comment here. Something might sound wacky to start with. I think he's talking about changing things in specifics here. But when we wore skin suits and filled in helmets at the team time trial at the Tour Qatar in 2010, everybody looked as if we had four heads. Now that's normal. It's weird if you don't do it. In general, we ride quicker, but everything else as well, with nutrition, the way of training, the equipment, everything is moving on, and you have to keep moving with the times. Okay, Victor's commented in here. He said, I got air pump from Walmart, full transparency with commercials. Okay, only 41 more days till the Giro d'Italia. Yes, I'm looking forward to the Giro. Should we do some... Let me look at this here. This person had a problem with me. Let's see if I could join this one up. This is a Twitter comment, which perfectly fine. This guy says... He posted this 5 days ago. It was a video of me ranting about Lance Armstrong on Lance Armstrong, the GOAT, and have 14 likes. Maybe a podcast about living in your mom's basement is more your speed. Lame. maybe so. I don't live in my mom's basement. She does have one. It's a fairly nice basement, I must say. But I do well. I have owned my own business. I have my own house. So, you know, things aren't all that bad from there. Should we go to the mailbag? There are some other ones here. Let's see if I could pull these up. Mentions. Nope, not that one. Okay, someone commented. Victor. Victor, by the way, you always comment on our stuff. We really appreciated that. I reviewed them. I commented, and then it changed it. So let's see if we could do... Some guy really didn't like one comment here. This was, it goes way back. Where was it? Oh, he didn't like my comment. This is from a Quinn Simmons thing from way back about Black Lives Matter. I made some comment. I don't really have too much, I guess I could say in that. Lance Armstrong said himself he lost like $10 million altogether. Yeah, well, he had to pay out more than that to Floyd Landis for the lawsuit and with the Postal Service. So, yeah, shit went well. Look, Lance is a crazy thing, which is he's got... Is he the GOAT? I mean, is he the guy? What do you do with those seven races? They just removed him. They don't actually have a winner. That's kind of weird, right? So, Greg LeMond thinks he wouldn't have won those races, but for the fact that he had been cheating. I don't know. It's hard to say. Okay, so coming up here on the 27th. So what's today? The 24th. So midweek, you have Dwars Door Vlaanderen. That'll be real exciting. There's the start list. So for the Lissabike, you have Laporte, you have Wout, you have Mads Pedersen and Stuyven. You have Wellens over here for UAE, Philipsen, No Matthew Vanderpool, though. Cole, you have Lampardi. It's still going. I'm glad to see him getting a bunch of these. Alaphilippe, Jorge Zimmermann, Benjamin Grimay, Bedial, Lazcano. Bora has Bob Jungles. And these races just get a little bit different here. So let's go back. I want to take a look at. Now, why can't I see the route on this one? There we go. Nope, it's not showing that. Okay, whatever. So that's on what, Wednesday? And then we have the Ronde van de Vlaarden coming up on next weekend. That one does have Philipsen, has Vanderpoel, and it should have Wout, has Mateo Jorgensen, which is, seems to be a good combo. Tiesch Benoot. I'm sure Mads Pedersen is in the mix of this one as well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to some of these Flanders, of course. And then we have Tour of the Basque Country on the 1st of April. And then the 7th of April is Paris-Roubaix. So just in a few weeks, we're going to have Paris-Roubaix. We're going to have Flanders, Roubaix, Amstel Gold, Flesh Wallon, Liège, Tour of Romandy. And then, as Victor said, 45 days, the Giro d'Italia starts on the 4th day of May. Okay. There you go, people. So, I'm going to play this once again, cause this song is it's called, The Best Around, or You're the Best. I think it was in the Karate Kid. Good 80s pump you up music. So there you have it. Pogacar drilled everyone at Catalonia. And as you would expect, and he is a number one rider in the world, I think. The Tour Basque Country, you're going to get Roglic against Vingego and possibly Remco over there. So that'll be a good one. Don't freak out about Sepp Kuss too much. I think he's going to be just fine. And Mateo Jorgensen, I think, might be the American Rider of the Year so far. We will see how things go. Until next week, check us out Sunday. We're going to do it Sunday again. See you, bye.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive. He goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who'd have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome.